my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey friends, Kevin Huntsberger here. Welcome to episode 282 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast, and admittedly, this week's episode, I don't want to say I hesitated at all because I think it's healthy to talk about these kinds of things. However, I know that some people will not necessarily like the subject matter, and that is that of Chris Benoit and his final days, and not really talking about that. We're not rehashing the tragedy, and by we, I mean my guest co-host, Shane Rich of Stride Pro Wrestling. He has a very unique perspective that he had approached me after The Dark Side of the Ring aired and asked if he could be on the podcast. And I said, absolutely, not even knowing exactly what his story was, but I knew it was something that he had been holding on to. He had told me that he had not told anyone this story before and wanted to share it with our listeners for the very first time. So I am super appreciative of him for wanting to kind of use this as the platform to share his story, his Chris Benoit experience, and it dates back many, many years, obviously. We don't really go into the tragedy. Obviously, The Dark Side of the Ring does an amazing job with that. We're not glorifying Chris Benoit by any means either. It's two fans of professional wrestling, of Chris Benoit, sharing stories and the influences, because I do think he was an influencer for a lot of men and women you see in the indie scene today, but also who are wrestling, in WWE or AEW. And again, we're not glorifying it, but we're also not condemning it. So I hope you listen with an open mind and understand kind of the points of view that we are coming from. And that being said, I'm going to segue in, and I mentioned this is episode 282. Of my 1-2-3 cents podcast, which for 282 Mondays each week without fail, this podcast has dropped. And that is something that I am extremely proud of because honestly, it is the most consistent thing that I have done, content creation wise in quite some time. And it's just over 5 years. I am thankful to Greg Mahochko and the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network for having me as a part of this. Him approaching me so many years ago and asking if I would be interested in doing a wrestling podcast. I had always wanted to, but I didn't have the platform. I didn't have the expertise to do it. And he kind of walked me through that and is still the one that makes sure that each episode drops every Monday as it's supposed to. So for that, I am super appreciative. But I am feeling, and you know, maybe it's the quarantine, you know, maybe I don't know exactly what I'm feeling right now, but it's kind of a sense of complacency and a sense of status quo and a sense of wanting to do better and wanting to do more and wanting to be that subscription that, that must listen to podcast every Monday. You know, I want people to be excited and not just feel obligated to listen because they're a friend or because they're a fan of Stride Pro Wrestling or because they liked the blog or the YouTube channel many years ago, and so they kind of transitioned into this journey and have joined in on the podcast. So that being said, I am looking for some legitimate, honest criticism, feedback, whatever the case may be. And, you know, after 20 plus years in journalism, I feel like I have thick skin. So you can DM me or Facebook, or Snapchat, text, whatever the case may be, however you want to reach out to me and give me your thoughts and opinions. And honestly, you are not going to hurt my feelings, I promise you. I want this to be a better listening experience for everyone involved. And I don't know what that's going to take what kind of new tweaks or evolutions, or maybe things stay the way they are. I don't know. I don't know what the answers are. But, you know, I have so many podcasting friends out there and so many podcasts that I listen to and respect. Obviously, you know, to me, the Conrad Thompson 5 podcasts are the torchbearers, if you will, the guys that I listen to. And, you know, obviously, I would love to be the Conrad Thompson of indie wrestling podcasting, but that's just, at this point, not an option. But he is someone that I look to and aspire to be more like and have that kind of following. Obviously, even if a fraction of that following, I would love. I have the Our Vantage Point podcast, which is the retro wrestling podcast. I love those guys, Joe and Quinn. They do a great job each week as well. Check them out. I listen to Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins every week. I listen to the guys over at Podzilla and the gals over at Podzilla 1985. You know, Pro Wrestling Unscripted more specifically. There's, of course, what's happening here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. Greg and Chad's Power Half Hour, Nerds United, the Five Heart Podcast, which admittedly I don't listen to because I'm not a fan of Nebraska Cornhusker football or athletics. But if you are, I highly recommend it. I have listened to a couple of episodes, and you know Greg does a good job with those. And then, of course, there is Chad's Positive Cynicism Podcasting Network. I love what he did and kind of broke off and did his thing. I am not looking to do that by any means, but I am looking to make this better for everyone, you know, listeners, and producing it and putting it together each and every week as well. So I'm rambling. I realize that I need to also mention Travis Yates, a friend of the show who is working on the Still Up All Night podcast, listening to or watching old USA Up All Night movies. So that's a fun nostalgia run for me as well. I just don't know. I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm not looking for a pat on the back. I'm looking for some constructive, legitimate criticism, feedback, whatever the case may be. So that all being said, stay tuned. This week's episode is coming up. I also hope that you check out the Stride Pro Wrestling old school show from over the weekend. Because of the quarantine, we were not able to hold the event on Saturday night as scheduled. So right after we knew things were not going to be back to normal as we were hoping, we decided to shoot several days worth of matches and put them together with some backstage vignettes. It is a no-budget production, and I, again, welcome your feedback and criticism, although there are some obvious things that are holding us back, but it has nothing to do with anything that I have control of or that we have control of. But I just look forward to hearing from everybody. And maybe that's part of the isolation. Maybe that's part of the quarantine. I'm craving that feedback and that, good or bad. And I know that I'll get some of both, but I want to hear from you guys. I really, really do. And I hope that everybody had a great Easter weekend. I hope everyone is continuing to stay safe, practicing the guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control, doing what you can to be healthy during COVID-19. So we can get through this and move on and have fun this summer, because I'm ready. I'm ready to get out and ready to do some things and have a good time with family and friends and my wrestling brothers and sisters, because I miss them as well. So everyone, thanks again for being a part of this show, being a part of this experience. I call it an experience because it is an ongoing thing. And to me, it's not just a weekly get this podcast done. It is a labor of love. It is something that I have made part of my life now, the My 123 Cents brand now, for almost 10 years. And I'm looking forward to celebrating 10 years in September, and we'll have some celebrations going on. But just let me know what you're thinking, what your thoughts are. What is your 123 Cents when it comes to My 123 Cents? Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show.
It's time for school, but you're not going to be saved by this bell. Established in 2016, Stride Pro Wrestling trainers have put their years of experience to help train the next generation of professional wrestlers. Nearly a dozen students have graduated and are now making a name for themselves
not only here at Stride Pro Wrestling, but beyond. Our athletes aren't locked into any long-term contracts, so if you want to train, use your head and contact Stride Pro Wrestling today. It's training you'll flip for. So kick your future into high gear now.
Hey everyone, as promised, my guest co-host this week is Shane Rich. Shane Rich and I go kind of way back to the All-American Pro Wrestling days, Pro Wrestling Collision, and now it's good to see you once again, Shane, wrestling and a part of Stride Pro Wrestling as well. Welcome back to the My 123 Cents podcast. We've talked before, but it's good to have you back on today.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing, brother? It's always good to be on here with you, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm going to give our listeners a little fun fact. I don't think I've ever said this publicly before. My very first time getting into the ring and wrestling was with All-American Pro Wrestling. It was in 2012 against Mike Masters. And the day before the show, I was like, because I, you know, I was an announcer. I didn't have any gear, and I'm like, I need some elbow pads. And you brought me a pair of your elbow pads, so I wore your elbow pads in my debut match because you were actually on the commentary team with us that night.
Yeah, and you know, that was such a great time and such a great way to be able to step in and do something different. And you know, like you said, here I was stepping into the announce team, and you were stepping into the ring, and. Let me tell you, my earlier years of wrestling, I realized just how important it is to have those elbow pads. If you're not used to that impact, I mean, oh my God, you need them. So I was more than happy to give them to you.
So, yeah, remind us all a little bit too, how long have you been in the business and kind of what got you inspired and getting involved in it?
Yeah, so I actually stepped foot inside a wrestling ring and started training around 2000, going into 2001. There was Stephen Davis, who was mm-hmm. one of the AAPW originals. He had come to like the local fair they had here at Knights of Columbus in Marion, and they just did like a one-off show, but they were holding training. So they announced, hey, if anybody's interested and wants to come and train with us, you know, come talk to us after the show. And so that was how I started with him. But what really got me wanting to get into wrestling was my dad always watched it growing up as a kid. It was just something we did. It was a Saturday morning thing. And then Saturday night was the big night that it was on TV before Monday Night Raw and Monday Nitro and all that stuff come about. So that was what really turned my eye to it. And you see the spectacle. You see the guys from my era that were the big stars were the Shawn Michaels and the Chris Benoit's and the you know, earlier Ultimate Warrior, stuff like that. Seeing Chris Benoit in WCW and just, I mean, the guy was like a pit bull, man. I mean, he was ripped everywhere. Everything he did was crisp. It was clean. There ain't a Chris Benoit match that you would ever watch and go, oh, well, that's just a bunch of fake wrestling stuff.
Right, you know, and my early recollections, and the topic this week is going to be about Chris Benoit on the kind of the heels of the wrestling, or the dark side of dark side of the ring. Gosh, easy for me to say.
Yes, sir. Dark side of the ring.
You actually approached me about doing this, and you know, the whole topic of Chris Benoit for so many years has kind of been taboo, and you know, everybody has their opinions. We're not going to obviously run through the story of how his life and the life of his wife and son ended, but we want to talk a little bit about Chris Benoit, the performer, and some personal experiences. And you know, my very first time remembering seeing Chris Benoit was actually in the old wrestling magazines when he was still in Calgary and wrestling, you know, up in that area. And so it wasn't until, I don't remember actually seeing him in the ring until probably about 94 or 95 when he was in ECW. But I remember obviously the magazines leading up to that, and then a very brief stint in the WWE with Ted DiBiase as his manager at some you know, house show dark match kind of stuff. But you talk to me a little bit more about Chris Benoit and what, you know, watching him as a wrestler yourself, because I want to see this through the eyes of a wrestler and what he represented for you.
Right. And I want to just kind of touch off of what you said. You know, we're not obviously not going to get deep into the demise of him and his family. But the reason I approached you and wanted to go into this with you was because of who he was leading up to that event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. But, you know, looking at his full life, I mean, this was a guy who was always noted as being a consummate professional. He was tough, but tough in the sense that you weren't going to break him. There was nothing you couldn't throw at him that he wouldn't take on and triumph. I mean, if you look at the story of a Rocky Balboa,
mm-hmm.
he is the Canadian version of the Rocky Balboa living the American dream in my eyes.
Yeah, I like that.
He was a smaller guy, you know, at a time whenever he should have been a big superstar years before he had hit that status. But it was, you know, everything was about being the big man in wrestling. And he just didn't have that size. Just naturally, he was 5'7", 5'8", and, you know, probably just under 200 pounds as he was trying to break in. So, you know, it was just the classic Rocky Balboa story.
And obviously influenced heavily by the Dynamite Kid, one half of the British Bulldogs, my favorite tag team of all time. And, you know, you see when you watch those old matches with Dynamite, you can see, you know, where Benoit was obviously influenced and took what he did and just turned it up to a 12 on the scale for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it was a mix of Dynamite Kid and a mix of Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's coming out of that Stu Hart dungeon, that Calgary family. So yeah, those influences were deeply rooted and embedded in him. And even going from there and going to Japan and learning the style over in Japan, I mean, that's life over there. Those guys are in that gym, you know, day in and day out, 7 days a week. And when they're not working out, they're doing chores, they're doing whatever the top guys are telling them to do just to earn the respect. So it's not like here where they'll just throw anybody in a ring. I mean, over there, if you get with a major company, they're gonna put you through the rigors and see what you got.
Now, obviously, you know, we've talked about you as a professional and being in the ring, and obviously I want to also kind of pick your brain on that perception of what a wrestler should look like, because obviously, you know, when I grew up and became a wrestling fan, it was Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and Andre the Giant. You know, we talked about that land of giants, and, you know, it was guys who either were those giant monsters like King Kong Bundy or the One Man Gang, or the guys that were, you know, cut up like Macho Man and, you know, Warrior Paul Orndorff, those kind of guys.
Right. Let's throw Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah,
I was going to not talk about him.
Yeah,
that guy had an amazing physique. He never got the break he should have got. But
as soon as I said Paul Orndorff, I thought of
look.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as a fan and as a wrestler, do you differentiate, or because obviously you have to have a certain look, I think, to become ultra successful in this business. And you obviously have kept yourself in great shape through the years with the training, and you don't necessarily look like, and this isn't a knock on anybody else, but you don't look like all the usual guys when you show up to an indie show. You know, there are certain guys that kind of stand out, and you're one of those. So you're welcome. Do you do that though? Because I don't know what, do you have to have the look to be successful in your view? Or, you know, talk to me as a wrestler here and not just as a fan, because obviously as a fan, you know, we get into guys like Rude and Mr. Wonderful and the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in order to have that element of believable, you have to have a certain look, you know. And that's not saying that the average guy that sits on the couch can't be a tough guy or can't have some type of hidden strength if you don't know. But, you know, it's a business. So being in the business, you know, you want to sell tickets, and everything that people take in before they even see the match comes through the eyes, comes from the moment that the lights hit and you walk through that curtain. And there's an expectation of the people that's in their minds as to what they're going to buy into and what they're not. I can think there's several times I've seen guys that but they had that incredible look. When they got in the ring, maybe they weren't so good. Maybe they weren't so great. But because they had a certain look, it captivated the audience and made them want to pay and pay attention the moment they walked through the curtain. And that's what you have to have, because people, a lot of times, especially in indies, people don't know your background. They don't know you. All they know is when you step through that curtain. That's either they're going to buy it or they're not. That's like setting the hook when you're going fishing, you know?
Right, right. Great analogy. And obviously Benoit had the ability in the ring. He had the look to an extent of the physique, but, you know, for so many years people, you know, claimed he wasn't tall enough, and you know, he, you know, it was a land of giants. And obviously by 2004, when he finally won the championship, the big championship in WWE, the tide was turning somewhat. I really wish, though, that that run would have been more sustainable and lasted longer. But obviously, throughout that summer, they decided to pivot or go into a different direction. How much of those kinds of influences do you think are that those decisions, you know, because obviously they took the belt off of Eddie, they took the belt then off of Benoit later that summer. How much of that, you know, is that an indictment on, you know, their, and I hate to even say it, like their height, because obviously they had the skills. Eddie, probably one of the most charismatic guys to ever step through the ropes. Benoit, of course, was more of a, you know, he was in there and taking care of business. He wasn't in there and going to talk you into the building, but he was certainly going to be able to put on a good show once you got there.
Right, right. You see, they use, like, the Eddie Guerrero situation, I believe, if I remember correctly, I think he asked for the title to be taken off him. I think he was having health problems, and his body was hurting him, and I think, he you know, the schedule was just too much for him. So I believe they asked for the belt to be taken off him. Now, getting into the Benoit situation, at that time, I really don't think it was his height. I think he had just established himself for what he truly was, and that was the ultimate professional wrestler, regardless of height. You know, the guy had a great muscular look. He was crisp in the ring. The moment and his music, you know, it's a lot like the Ultimate Warriors. Mm-hmm. The moment that first kind of kicks on, like, yeah, you knew, oh my God, here we go. This is what we've been waiting to see. And then he walks out, and like I said, he's just like a pit bull, man. He's got muscle all over the place. He's ripped. You know, they knew they had a legit guy there. Now, again, looking from the business standpoint, here you have Randy Orton, who is a third-generation superstar. And what better person to try to build your next generation of wrestlers and your next generation of champion than to get him in there and really see what he's got against the guy they know is fail-proof. You know, if Orton were to go in there and if he would have miss that matchup in any way, you better believe the chops would have been coming out, and a statement would have been made in the ring to let the people in the back know that this isn't the guy. You know, this isn't the guy, this isn't the time. Not saying it wouldn't have changed the belt in that match, but you saw Orton didn't have the title long.
Right, right.
You know, he just, and you know, not as a knock on Orton, it's just as a professional, that's something we got to look at. I mean, we all say, yeah, I want to be the champion. Yeah, I want to be this. But there's so much that goes along with, I mean, it's more than being a wrestler. It's being able to keep up with the schedule, being able to keep up with the public, being able to keep yourself healthy, and being able to keep your mind sharp and crisp, because everything's live. Back in the day, it all used to be taped.
Yeah.
Everything is live now. So if you mess up on live camera, and the whole world is seeing it, and that can do damage to a company, whether it's WWE or TNA or WCW, or, you know, and losing that audience. That's why they're always looking at the ratings every week, and who's setting the hook and keeping the people hooked, and who's a catch and release kind of fan.
Yeah, and you know, Benoit to me was just like you said, that consummate professional. He had the look. Even after he lost the championship, you know, he was that next year at WrestleMania, he's part of that huge first inaugural Money in the Bank ladder match, you know, performed well there. There are so many highlights throughout, you know, his time. And also, I feel like he kind of took some of the younger guys under his wing and kind of showed them the ropes, pun mildly intended there. But, you know, I feel like he was not only, you know, we talked about the influences that Davey or that Dynamite Kid and that Bret Hart had on him, I feel like he also influenced a generation of wrestlers throughout the years as well.
He absolutely did. I can tell you from my personal view, you know, we go back to talking about the body and the look, and you know, Chris Benoit is definitely a body guy and the type of guy that got me into lifting weights. I mean, I started really lifting heavy when I was about 15, and in my bedroom, above my leader weight bench that I got from like a local Sears department store, was a Chris Benoit poster from a WCW magazine.
Mm.
And I would look at that when I was working out because it was like, all right, I need to get a bigger neck like he's got. I need to work on my traps. I kind of need to break myself and mold myself in what I'm seeing here because, I mean, this is the look. No doubt about it. This is the look. This is the style. Granted, you know, as you're getting into being your own wrestler, you can take from the old and make it new. Mm-hmm. So, you know, make your transitions where you can to differentiate. But as far as the body and what he did to inspire people, Chris Benoit was a huge, huge influence on me and my wrestling style and just that tradition of, again, you know, paying respect to everything that he's laid, every wrestler that's come before him and keeping it legitimate and keeping it to where people are enjoying themselves and it's a money-making business.
Did you ever have any opportunities to meet Chris Benoit throughout the years?
I did, and whenever I reached out to you and asked to do this, I'd been wanting to tell this story for so long because I never really have shared it with anybody. I met Chris Benoit in 2005 when I was in the Air Force. I was deployed to Iraq, and they come through for a handshake tour before they brought all the guys over for the Christmas with the Troops, tribute to the Troops.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they had brought those guys through, and I was like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. He's really coming through. So all day long, they get these guys up, you know, first thing in the morning, and they're running them all over the base. It's like 140, 150 degrees out there, and they're just taking them all over the base to shake hands, take pictures, and they were just great about it. At the end of the night, we had this tent that was kind of like the local meeting area for everybody. People would go out and, you know, they'd smoke, have their smoke breaks, maybe have a beer or two. They'd let you have a beer or two when you were over there just to help people keep their sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were drinking, but you have a beer or two, whatever. And they had tables set up, and you walked down, and it was like, it was Hurricane Helms, Trish Stratus, Lita, Val Venus, Ric Flair, and Chris Benoit.
Wow.
So, I mean, huge lineup of people come out there. They're having a drink with you. They're, you know, they're mixing in. And so as I'm going down this table getting these autographs, I got to Chris, and it was like, as much as I tried to be a professional, I was in military uniform, so I could be a fan.
Yeah.
Just like a fan, just like a little kid, I looked at him, and I was like, brother, I got to tell you, man, like, you were everything I, you know, in a wrestler that I would want to be. Like, you were the ultimate wrestler. If I ever had a shot at making it to the big time, I would want to have the career that you've had. And he kind of smiled and shook my hand and was like, you know, hey, man, I appreciate you saying that, you know. And he's like, you serious? Like, you want to get into this? Yeah, absolutely, you know. And he's like, well, I'll tell you what, man. He said, we'll probably be done with this in about 30 minutes or so. He said, so on the base, we had like trailers whereby I stayed. They're kind of like sections of dorms.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, this is the building number that I'm in, and this is the room. He's like, come by there in about 30 minutes, and we can talk about it, you know. All right, cool, man. So I instantly went into like, if your buddies invited you over to the house for dinner, you'd go get a bottle of wine or you'd sweet potato salad.
Right.
Whatever, you know. And I'm like, man, what do I got? I got protein bars. That's about it. These guys are into fitness. Maybe they don't have any good protein supplements with them. I don't know. So I got like this huge box of protein bars, and I go to the building, and I go up to the room, and I'm knocking, and nothing. And I'm like, oh, man, you know. And I was disappointed, but at the same time, I was like, dude's a superstar, man. Like, he probably just said that to you know, shine me on, you know, all right, kid, see you later. And or maybe he forgot, who knows. But I wasn't holding it against him. So I turn and start walking out of this building. And as I get to the door swings open. And again, like a fan and not a businessman, I kind of got starstruck for a second because I see green hair come walking through the door. It's Hurricane Helms. And he's like, hey, what's up, man? He's like, are you looking for Chris? So he remembered me talking to Chris earlier.
Wow.
Yeah. I said, I just went by his room, but I said, he's not there. He's like, come with me, man. Hold on. You know how he talked. Come with me, man. Hold on. So he goes walking down the hall, and I'm following him, and bam, bam, bam. I mean, he like beats on this door, and I was like, oh my God, no, this is not setting the right tone. And Chris gets up and answers the door, and he's like, hey, man, you know, that kid's out here that you told him you wanted to talk to him. He's out here waiting on you. And he's like, oh, he's like, yeah, man. He's like, I fell asleep on accident. He's like, tell him to give me a couple minutes, and I'll be right with him. So he's like, hey, man, you can hang out in my room if you want. So I was like, all right, cool. And I said, hey, I don't know what kind of protein you guys got here, man, but I got these protein bars, dude. And he's like, oh, hell yeah. And he takes a big old handful. He's like, these are awesome, you know. And, like, he unlocks the door to his room. And, like, those rooms were set up for two people to be in. So there's, like, two beds and two wall lockers. Mm-hmm. So, like, on the opposite bed, there was, like, this whole treasure trove of, like, protein bars. And he's like, you can have these, man. I don't really like them. And it was, like, anything you could think of. I was like, good God, man. I was like, all right, cool. I appreciate it. So getting back to Chris, so, you know, Chris is like, all right, yeah, send that kid over here, you know? So I went walking in, and I shook his hand, and he's like, how you doing and everything, you know? And we started talking wrestling, and he was telling, basically just being real inspirational, like, you can do this, man. You just gotta, you know, gotta stick with it. And he was telling me about kind of his ups and downs. And, you know, when he was 30, he had that neck surgery that took him out of WWE for like a year and a half, I believe. Mm-hmm. So he was telling me about coming back from his neck surgeries and everything. And, like, as he's doing this, like, he's packing his bags because they're on the road. Like, they're getting ready to go. So the poor guy fell asleep, took a nap. He'd been running all day. Now he's getting ready to have to leave and go somewhere else. I just remember as he's talking to me, like, he's packing stuff up, and, like, he's like, reaching into his jacket, and he's, like, he had on, it was, like, kind of like the collegiate jackets, or the varsity jackets, uh-huh, where it's, like, the wool with the leather sleeves, and it was a WWE one. I just remember he kept pulling bottles of wine out of the inside pocket, like, big bottles of wine. I'm, like, how the hell does he even fit in those in there? Like, it was like a magic show. You know, he probably pulled like six bottles of wine on his jacket. But he just kept talking to me. He's like, well, hey, man, check it out. He's like, if you want a shot with WWE, he's like, I'll get you a connection right now. So he opened the door, and like one of the production guys that was walking around with the, correct me if I'm calling them the right thing, but they're walking around with the cameras and taking pictures and video and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm, sure.
WWE shirts on.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, man, he's like, go down the hall and get Gary Davis and tell him to come down here for a second. So Gary Davis was like an executive at WWE corporate.
Okay.
So he comes down and he's like, hey, Gary, he's like, I want you to give this kid your information, and then you guys talk when he gets back to the States and help him out. And sure enough, the guy gave me his email and everything, and was like, "Yeah, you know, we'd love to have you sometime, man." You know, he's like, "Give me, you know, get in contact with me when you get back." And so we shook hands, you know, kind of did the bro hug, mm-hmm, and I was just like, "God, you know, thank you so much! Like, what an experience! Not only do you get to meet your hero as a kid, but he was just a legitimate guy. Like, it wasn't like he was, oh, I'm this superstar and just giving you lip service.
Right.
Like, he was genuine in everything that he did. And it was just like to have that personal experience with him. And he was very soft-spoken. I mean, the guy was super tough. I can remember shaking his hand, and he was just so strong. I felt like, God, you know, if this guy really wanted to, he could clench down and I'd be toast. Mm-hmm. Like, my hand would be done for.
Yeah.
He was just so strong in that aspect. But, like, for someone to be so strong but so level and so caring and just really, like, invested in people. You know, they say he was, like, very quiet, not really an outgoing person, but it was, in my experience with him, I mean, he was just – he was like the guy that wanted to level with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like he would talk to you, you know, and if you want an evaluation, he'd give you an evaluation. If he could help you out, it was like he just came off as that very genuine person, you know. So so moving into, you know, later on, it was just like, you know, you can't believe that would happen. That would be like Superman, you know, becoming evil in the comic books. And, you know, you just, it's not a story that you would ever buy into or believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just mind blowing.
Well, yeah. And obviously 2 years after this meeting with him, you know, this horrific tragedy happens, I can still remember exactly where, because this was really, this was in the era before, like, at least I didn't have a smartphone.
No.
I still had a landline, and I remember my buddy Chad, who had just moved out to Los Angeles, called me,
right.
And he said, "Have you heard?" And I'm like, "Heard what?" And he said, "Chris Benoit, Nancy, and their son are all dead." And I immediately ran to my computer and got online, and it was like WWE is obviously their top headline, and it was a Monday. I remember that because then they did Raw. But just the goosebumps, and I'm getting them right now just remembering this, you know, because, you know, obviously I met him for like 15 seconds at a autograph signing in Carbondale where, you know, his flight was delayed. And this was like in February of that same year. And so it was like in and out, in and out, in and out, come through. But, you know, he was, you know, sometimes the wrestlers, when you go to these things, they can be assholes or whatever. But yeah, even though he was late and he was obviously going to then be late to the show that he was there to actually perform at, he was still taking time to take photographs, sign something for everyone. So still a good guy in that aspect. But it was so shocking. And I wonder, because for me as a fan, I still, you know, I feel like I am able to, with a lot of wrestlers, and I feel like it's hard for people, though, to separate the quote-unquote character from the person, you know, the real person. So, obviously, Chris Benoit is his given name, and, you know, that was his quote-unquote character, too. But, I can draw the line between the two and still remember and recognize the career that he had versus, you know, the last 48 hours of his life. And I think a lot of fans maybe sometimes have trouble with that. And in watching, you know, Dark Side of the Ring, I feel like it kind of was therapeutic as well, because it helped, I don't want to say justify my feelings, because I wouldn't have changed my mind, but I feel like there's a lot of people that kind of still struggle with that 13 years later. Where are you on that?
No, I absolutely agree with you. I've struggled ever since it happened. I can remember, whenever I'd met him, you know, this was like months before Guerrero had even passed. So, you know, that hadn't even happened. That hadn't taken a toll on him yet. So looking at the Dark Side of the Ring and the way that they kind of told the story, I felt was right, because for so many years, like you said, people like yourself, like me, who know, I mean, this was something that happened almost 13 years ago, and from the moment you hear about what happens, just you're just in awe. You're just like, you can't believe, you know, shock is said, and you can't believe that you know, Chris Benoit did what? Like, I remember when they said it on Monday Night Raw, like, I instantly, like, burst into tears. This was before you knew any of the details. You just were like, so people were speculating, you know, what happened? Were they in a car accident? Were they killed? Like, somebody murder them? And it was just, my God. And I can remember sitting there glued to my TV for that three-hour tribute show to him. And, I mean, WWE, you know, they get a lot of flack for that show. I felt they did the right thing. I really did, because, like you said, they separated Chris Benoit that they knew and the Chris Benoit that was the performer that they knew, and dedicated that night to everything that had led up to the tragedy. And I see absolutely nothing wrong with that, because it wasn't just a tribute to Chris Benoit. It was a tribute to Nancy. You know, Nancy was a pioneer for women in the industry.
Right.
You know, and it was a tribute to her, and it was a tribute to their son Daniel. I mean, the whole family, the WWE was mourning the loss of the entire family. So, just the way that hit. And then on Tuesday night, when they did SmackDown and the details started coming out, and Vince decided, all right, well, now we're going to wipe, you know, Chris Benoit away from the WWE. It's tough. It's tough. You want to say you understand why the company did that, but at the same time, in watching the documentary and seeing all the accolades, and I feel Dark Side of the Ring did justice in telling the story, because they showed how, you know, he and Nancy had come to be, told their life for what it was. It was really, for what they were showing leading up to, it was a pretty good life. The son talked about, they had their arguments here and there, which, you know what, that's natural. I don't care who you are. When you're living with somebody, it doesn't matter if you're married, if you're roommates, whatever, there's going to be disagreements, there's going to be arguments. It's natural, okay? Everything leading up to that seemed fairly natural to happen in any type of relationship where you're domiciled together at some point.
Where are you on him being kind of, I didn't go and look at, and I meant to do that before we started recording, to go back and look at some of the pay-per-views that he was on, and I don't know if things have been, because I know at one point, his name was removed, and I'm on their website right now, and, I searched his name, but I'm not finding anything associated with him. I don't know if they have just taken his name off of things or if they've actually removed matches from the network that he was involved in. Where are you on that, though?
From what I've seen and from what I've researched myself, and it has been 13 years of researching, so as far as the network goes and anything, you're not going to be able to find anything WWE and Chris Benoit related. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go and say you watch a full pay-per-view from like a WCW or something, it can come across in there.
Okay.
But I think they try their best to pull as much of that stuff back as they can and not highlight. So when you go to like just search Chris Benoit in general, nothing's going to come up. But I think there are times when his matches will slip through if you watch an entire pay-per-view.
Gotcha. Now, where are you on that, though? They say time heals all wounds. Do you think one day, I don't personally think he'll ever go into the Hall of Fame, but I did like the fact that, and I had never thought of this before, was at some point inducting Nancy into the Hall of Fame, because she certainly, like you said, I remember Nancy and Kevin Sullivan from, her Fallen Angel. And see, again, we didn't get Florida Championship Wrestling where I lived in St. Louis, but certainly in their magazines. And, of course, prepubescent boy seeing some of those photos of Nancy back in the day. I mean, she was a beautiful woman. And
she was money.
Yeah, and then, transitioning into the woman character and obviously the influence she had with the Steiners and with Doom and, in that era and with the Four Horsemen eventually, she definitely was a major player that kind of, I feel like, has gotten forgotten because of the tragedy. Her legacy before the tragedy, it kind of was just not there, but or wasn't talked about, and I certainly think that she could be. But do you think that in time would we ever see a profile piece on Chris Benoit produced by the WWE, or are they too worried about investors and public perception in the court of public opinion? Do you think?
Yeah, no, I don't think you'll ever see that. As much as it breaks my heart to even say that, I don't think you'll see that. I do think that WWE has the power and the ability to go and dig up, footage of Nancy and what she did, and to pay respect to her and pay homage to her, kind of like they did like Miss Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and pay respect, pay your homage, and talk about her and induct her into the Hall of Fame, because that it was a family. Regardless of the tragedy, it was a family. I can see why they're not going to touch Benoit and put anything with him related with what they do. But you know what? You can do it for Nancy, and you can do it for Nancy's family and the Benoit family, Chris's dad, David, who is Chris's son. I know Chris has a daughter. I don't know what her name is. I think she's kind of wanted to be left alone with all this, but I know it would do a great deal of good for them. And I think just everybody in the wrestling community, that's a project they could get behind. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
One thing that really stood out to me at the end of the documentary was David Benoit that you just mentioned, Chris's oldest son. Number one, the striking resemblance, but the fact that he and Nancy's sister have reconciled and have talked and come back together, even though he was a step-nephew, there was still that family connection there. But I can't imagine having a loved one who commits such a horrific act and then, forging on a relationship with those people. Do you think, though, when David, when it's all said and done, because there has been talk and speculation over the last couple of years that, that he will wrestle or that he is training and wants to wrestle, how do you, you know, where does he go? How does he wrestle? You know, does he wrestle as David Benoit? You know, does he have, is the Chris Benoit tag on him one that's so bad that he would have to change his name? He obviously can't change his look. He looks just like his dad, but would that be a hindrance to him, do you think? Indie shows, I think, would obviously eat that up, but you know, in AEW or a WWE, is he damaged goods just because of his family reputation?
I think to touch back on how you started with that, to have somebody in your family who has done such a horrendous act, and there are several factors that are still unknown about whether, you know, what led to it, but it's always going to be attached to him regardless if you look at, you know, the head trauma or anything else. If, you know, people are always, you know, it happened and this is who did it. That's mm-hmm. how it's always going to look at. But I think in telling that story, you know, I think that for David Benoit, I don't think that the Benoit name in general should have a black mark on it because of this. Is, you know, David Benoit is a whole different person. This poor kid, I think he was like 13 when this happened.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's a young teenager, yeah. Just at the edge of becoming a man.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the edge of becoming a man. And the man that he wanted to be was also the man who was his father, who is also the man that is going to be constantly, you know, remembered for this tragedy. And it's, you know, that's a tough road. But getting to David himself, I don't think that he should be blackballed from the WWE or from any company because of something that happened with his dad. That's not saying that David is that way. David is his own person. And I believe, and I'm not the perfect Christian, but I believe in the power of God, and I believe you need to let that young man have his chance. And I want to say that I believe that David Benoit is a very strong person for coming forward and acknowledging the tragedies and speaking to the public and helping people just kind of heal from that wound, but it also into him moving forward as a wrestler, because it shows that, you know, it shows the character that young man is. I mean, that is one hell of a young man there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that he should have his chance. He talked about wanting to be called Chris Benoit Jr. And I mean, it's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
Not on a big stage. No one's going to accept that, because whenever you go into a Google search and you go and put Chris Benoit Jr., Chris Benoit is going to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that Chris Benoit, you know, the tragedy is going to come up. And that's what people want to stay away from, you know, kind of like with China doing the adult films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WWE didn't want anything to do with China until after she had passed, because if you go and you Google search China, all her adult stuff's going to come up, and they don't want to be tagged to that. But, you know, if you put David Benoit, then chances are David Benoit is what's going to pop up. And I think it should be a clean slate. I think that young man should be able to tell his own story, be his own character, even if it was something that he wanted to derive pieces from his dad and make his own, a lot like Brian Pillman Jr.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think he should be given that chance, because Brian Pillman Jr., you know, he's been able to grow and be, you know, a great performer on the independent level, and he's still growing. And I wholeheartedly believe that David can do the same thing. He's just, as much as it sucks to say it, he's just going to have to take his dad and his dad's memory and hold it kind of like that internal fire
mm-hmm.
that is helping him to become a good performer, a great performer, hopefully, and to drive him to where he wants to be. And it's just something that he's probably going to have to pay homage to internally. It's going to be hard for him to come out on a public platform and say, you know, my dad this and my dad that and my dad, you know, it's understandable that he would want to do those things. But I think when you look at a WWE or something like that, they're going to want him to internalize it.
Very well said, and I 100% agree with you. And I feel like this, you know, just like watching the documentary, kind of talking through this once again, and hearing your story, I really appreciate you sharing it. A very therapeutic session, I feel like, at least, and I would be interested to hear listeners' thoughts on Chris Benoit, his legacy, and you know, I feel like, you know, Shane, you and I agree on a lot of this. Any final thoughts on Chris Benoit and his career?
I mean, at the end of the day, being a professional wrestler and being Chris Benoit, the person leading up to everything before the tragedies, was a solid guy, a great guy, someone that, again, you could look at like a Rocky Balboa that would inspire people and cause a movement. And, I mean, not just nationwide, but across the world. I mean, he did great things when he was in Japan, when he was in Europe. I mean, he's just a worldwide figure. So when you look at his career, I mean, it's absolutely Hall of Fame worthy, but due to the tragedy, it's not going to reach that level. So I agree with you, and like you said, just hearing his son come out talking about it, me and you talking about it, the story that I shared, I've never opened up and shared that with but maybe one or two people. I think my mom knows, mm-hmm. and my brother knows.
Wow.
So that's as far as I let that story get out, because it was something internal for me, and it just, after seeing the dark side of the ring, you know, I thought, you know, man, I've got to share that story. And you know what? I honestly hope that maybe it'll come across his son, David Benoit's ears. Maybe it'll be something that will help him to heal himself. I mean, he's done a lot of therapeutic things and talking in front of the camera himself, but to hear from people, whether, you know, I'm sure he hears it a lot from people, but I think one more is absolutely going to help in his healing too.
Absolutely. Well, again, Shane Rich, I appreciate you being a part of the show this week. And fans, Stride Pro Wrestling will be back eventually. You know, we are following the orders of the quarantine and everything going on with COVID-19. But we encourage you to check out strideprowrestling.com for the very latest updates. And we will keep you updated and in sync with what's going on as soon as we are able to. Once again, for Shane Rich, I'm Kevin Huntsberger with the My 123 Cents podcast. And we'll talk again next week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.